Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Are you there, Steve? It's me, Margaret.
Recording is in progress.
One day I gotta learn the lyrics to that song.
I think you actually blew out the speakers there for a second.
Good, good. I hope everyone enjoyed that. I hope everyone's ear canal enjoyed that.
What's the what? Do you remember? Do you know what the lyrics are?
It's Love Beyond the Stars.
No. It's Beyond the Rim of the Starlight.
Is it?
Is my love is wandering in starflight. I know he'll find me in star cluster reaches love. I don't know, something like that.
Shit.
Hold on, I think you're something might be weird with your speakers. Give me a second.
Okay.
Give that a try.
Hello, hello.
Something okay. Weird. Yeah, you're just really quiet.
Really
I don't know if that's just my end or if it's on the actual recording, but hey, everybody, welcome to Game Classy. I am your host, Joe, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Steve.
Hello. I don't know why I'm freaking out, why I'm quiet.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I got you. I had my speakers on pretty low, too, so that could have been part of it.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, I can't have I got to have it a little low so I can
Gotta hit my pops.
You gotta have my pops. If I have my speakers up too high, then everyone can hear that I'm watching the Star Trek Picard finale again. And I don't.
I see.
They don't need to know that I'm watching it for a third time.
Leave me alone. I'm watching the finale again.
Did you watch it?
I did.
Did? What did you think?
I think that we got three extremely good Star Trek movies.
Yeah, I think we got one extremely good Star Trek movie, one pretty good Star Trek movie, and then one that kind of fails in the dismount.
I was a fan.
Yeah, I like if you had to look at the three star if you had to look at all the Star Trek Picard season three episodes, the first four, fantastic, amazing, one of the best movies ever. The second four, they were good. It was a little more schlocky, a little more It was verging into First Contact Insurrection territory. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit, not too bad. I think all of the character stuff was great. It was more of the action stuff that was more of the schlocky.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Star Trek. You got to have some schlock.
You do. It's true. And then in the last two, it was definitely very, very, I don't know. It was fun, but it got very, very schmaltzy. So schlocky and schmaltzy.
It got very schmaltzy.
I at the end, I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Lord of the Rings? Is this the finale of Return of the King?
It really, really had that. It did have that epic feel to it, though. But man, I'm not going to lie. I will watch if they make that other crew into a show, I will watch the fuck out of that show.
You know, okay, so spoilers, everybody. We won't talk that long about Picard, even though I probably could. So Steve has finally caught up on it, and it's one of those things where it's like, I know Steve will put off watching something for a long time, and if I know something that he's going to absolutely adore, I'm going to push him to watch it.
I finished it. It's done. I watched yes. it. It was good.
it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
There was like a couple weird things though, so here are my complaints, which are very minuscule in the entire grand scheme of new Trek, right? Mm-hmm. My complaints are why did they need to steal Picard's body from Daystrom? In terms of plot, they had to go to Daystrom to get data. We totally understand that. But why did they have to steal Picard's body for the plot wise, right? Is there any, like, was there any reason given?
Like, why?
Why the changelings and the Borg had to steal Picard's real human body?
Oh, they didn't steal his body. They took his, they took that bit of
brain, his brain, right?
Yeah.
Why did they have to take his brain again?
Because that's where the Borg adaptation was, so they could disseminate it through the transporters.
Oh, okay. See, that was like really confusing to me. I may also have been super duper high while watching it. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, the finale dropped on 420. I got a little too high watching it, and like, don't get me wrong, but it did kind of change the flavor a little bit of the show for me.
I could see that. I could see why you're on the third rewatch.
Yeah, pretty much. Yesterday I did my second rewatch just to make sure. I was like, okay, I gotta watch this again, because I don't know how much of it was just made up in my head or how much of it was real.
I thought they did a decent job. I shouldn't say decent. I think they did an excellent job of navigating and patching up the really stupid stuff from the other seasons, as well as like giving a nice end cap to, I mean, basically all of 90s Trek.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very, very nice end cap to 90s Trek. I
like TNG. Like, it added more for Voyager. It added more for DS9. It added more for, obviously, it added more for TNG. And it, like, you know, it kind of like culminated all of those stories into one, which was, you know.
Yeah, it was mostly the Next Generation with flavorings from DS9 or Voyager.
Yeah.
You know, not and a little bit of a Enterprise for you there too, right?
That is true. I thought that was pretty great.
Were you excited when on the second to last episode? I loved that part, but I thought it was very, very schmaltzy when they brought out the Enterprise D.
Oh, right? That was so ridiculous. I was just like, oh, come on.
I know, exactly. Yeah, I was like, oh, that this is ridiculous.
It's at least justifiable, considering they put, like, you know, that's like, that at least makes sense that like yeah, of course Geordi has that, because like, that's what Geordi does, that's what he's been doing for the past, you know,
yeah,
20 years. So like, at least there's that, at least there's that part.
The only thing that I was kind of upset about was what that he said. So they rebuilt the Enterprise D, right? And that they took most of the drive section from another ship. But I was like, wasn't the drive section the only part of the Enterprise D that actually survived? Like, they blew up they crashed the saucer section. Did the drive section blow up in Generations?
I don't know.
It's been a long time. I don't remember.
I don't know if it fully exploded or if it did that thing where like it blows into pieces.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know that the drive section was crashed on the planet, and not the drive section. The saucer section was on the yeah, planet. But I think the drive was somewhere else. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
But I did like some of the callbacks to First Contact and what's it called? The Best of Both Worlds. I rewatched both just to familiarize myself with them. Best of Both Worlds totally hangs up. But the funny thing is that the Borg and Best of Both Worlds aren't that scary. Like, what they do at Wolf, 359 is very scary, but like, right, the Borg as an enemy are not necessarily that scary. They're just like a bunch of mimes walking around.
Yeah, well, that was the thing that was the thing that kind of made them scary. Where it's just like, why aren't they doing anything? It's just like, because they like know that you're not a threat. Like,
yeah,
like they. So that's a very weird and alien thing to experience, I would imagine, if like, especially if, you know, you're going by Star Trek rules where there's lots of like other sentient races.
Yeah,
so your normal experience with another race is like, you show up on their ship and they're like, oh, what are you doing here? Or they talk to you, right? They don't just like continue about their business.
Well, and then you have, by the time you get to, oh, and even Locutus isn't that scary. He's actually more bumbly than scary in that episode. And then you get to First Contact where they're like zombies, right? You're just like, well, this is a very big change of pace. And then you got the Borg Queen, played by Alice Krieg in the movie. and she's pretty scary. And then you get the Borg Queen in fucking the end of Picard, and you're like, what the fuck am I watching? This thing is horrifying. It's very cool. But the entire, yeah, the entire climactic confrontation with Picard and the Borg Queen at the end of Picard season 3 is like, you have this horrendous zombie Borg Queen who's like, nah, I'm a giant puppet that looks amazing. And Picard is the 70-year-old man just standing there. You're just, it's like, it's a very, very silly juxtaposition, especially because neither of them can really do anything because neither of them can move that fast. That's where I think that the bigger schmaltz hit was that end sequence of the Enterprise D flying into the Borg cube like they're doing the Death Star run from Return of the Jedi.
Yes, that was pretty ridiculous.
And then, like, okay, we're going to blow up the core. We only have about a minute to get you guys. Oh, no, we can't find him. Riker reaching out with his love for Troy. And then she's like, I could find him with my love. And I'm like, oh, my God, Jesus Christ.
It was very schmaltzy. Yes, absolutely.
I couldn't believe what I was watching. But you know what? They pulled it off, and I can't really complain that much because it works in theory. It was the end point of Riker Deanna's arc where, you know, he opens himself up to her again, and it makes sense. I liked it. I also liked Worf kung fuing with a Borg drone.
Yes. Worf was you know what I really liked about this series? I'm not gonna lie. Worf was actually just awesome in this series.
Yeah, like, he was.
Worf was how you want Worf to be.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I would actually like to see if they were going to do like another season, if they did like Star Trek Worf, because I think that they could explore some stuff with the Klingons, because they didn't do that at all in all of Picard. It'd be kind of nice to see, like, hey, what's going on over in the Klingon Empire right now? Like, what's Worf doing?
Yeah, or, you know, we could also maybe get a show about the Cardassians, keeping up with the Cardassians.
Keeping up with the Cardassians. We could keep up with them.
I mean, I know people have made that joke many, many times, but, you know, they could make it a reality.
A reality show.
Oh. It's just Garak and Bashir's gay romance.
Hey, I'd watch that.
I would watch it too. Are you kidding me? I would watch the shit out of that show.
I can't argue there. No, I'd like to see like Star Trek Worf, and this would be my pitch for the show, is that Klingon culture has kind of evolved more from just like petty warlords to more like pre-Western contact samurai, right? Where it's like they've become so, the warrior part of them has become spiritual, kind of like how Worf is now, where he's all about meditation and finding the inner peace within himself. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're more, but they're more like samurai. So it's like the Meiji Restoration samurai, where they're all like all about meditation and honor and all that great stuff, but they're very calm about it.
Yes.
I could see something like that. Some sort of political intrigue. Kind of like Scorpion political deck, L5R going on there.
My Scorpion political deck.
Exactly. But anyway, that's what I would like to see out of it. But overall, I give the Picard season 3 probably an A-. I can't go any better than that, just because I believe that as much as I love it, it's still hampered by the fact that everyone is a very, very old television actor. So they all act like television people. And the script and TV, the script and the way it's filmed does not lend itself well to that very 80s style of acting, TV acting.
Yeah.
So it was, but everyone acted the way I wanted them to. But like, if I have to look at it objectively as an actual TV show or as a media presentation of media, doesn't quite hit there.
It was also amazingly fun to watch Jonathan Frakes. He looked like he was having a fucking great time.
Yeah, it's John. He was like the biggest star of the season because he was just he knew exactly what he was in and he had a lot of fun with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think everybody who was kind of in on what they were doing was having fun. I like that Geordi was very cranky and old.
Yes, he was stodgy.
it was very, I liked that he was like stodgy. I think that was good because, you know, everyone else is acting like they were on Next Gen, But Jordy's the one who's got daughters now, and he's got to like take care of them. He's got to be their dad, and so he's got to be an old stodgy dad. He can't be the fun young Jordy anymore.
It's true.
I wonder if he had to clone his children. I wonder if he ever actually fell in love with a woman. Definitely not Leah Brahms. She shut that down real quick.
Yeah, I'll say Jordy is famously has no riz, so I don't know.
Yeah, he got no game.
Right.
And I don't know if I really liked what they did with Data, but I'm okay with it.
I think it's interesting. I liked it. I thought it was nice. I thought that kind of like gave like a real like culmination to like Data's character arc as well.
Yeah. Well, I loved the Data versus Lore scenes. That was
very cool.
That was a great little subplot. But after he comes out of it, I like that he has emotions now and everything, like they gave him his end thing. I don't like the way that they explained how he's old now.
Oh, right.
I kind of wish they were like, with Data going, you know, I aged my appearance because I feel people are more comfortable knowing with me aging along with them. Mm-hmm. I find I get weirder looks when I stay the same, when I look the same and all my friends age, something like that. I think it would have been fine. But anyway, that's enough Trek talk for now. I know we could keep going with it. The other thing that really pissed me off, when it's actually kind of funny, so spoilers once again, I know, you know, whatever, but they killed off Shaw.
Oh, I was so salty about that, actually.
But if you notice, they never actually say he's dead, right? Mm. You kind of get the illusion that he died. I personally think that they saw the reception to Shaw from the fans and were like, we can't kill him. And they may have cut some lines that like referred to him as dead. And maybe they'll try and bring him back later. Like he got a promotion. He's an admiral now. He's in the beep beep chair, something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I honestly think that they probably, I feel like his ending was so abrupt that they probably cut whatever he was going to do.
Yeah.
Whatever they were going to do with his death. Also,
he better, all I'm saying is they rewrote the unstupid from Picard season one in this season, so they can fix what they did to Shaw as well.
Yeah. Also, I also don't like that they renamed the Titan the Enterprise. That kind of made me mad. Because, like, the Titan is its own ship. It should stay the Titan. It doesn't have to be the Picard. It doesn't have to be the Enterprise.
Here's the thing, though, and I think that's very, I think because they very specifically are going to make, they're going to try and make another, like, actual Star Trek show.
Yeah.
Sure. So, like, it has to be, if they're doing another actual Star Trek show, it has to be the Enterprise.
Yeah. I think they could have done it better, though.
I agree.
I don't think
it has to be the Enterprise.
Yeah.
But.
Well, I think it's because I think Tuvok at the end should have taken Seven. And it's like, and here's your first command. And it's like they go over to a ship and they pass over the Titan and show the Enterprise, the new Enterprise.
Oh, that would be good.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's like you give everybody the expectation that it's going to be the Titan, but they give him give her the Enterprise.
Yes, I like that.
But they had to like do that whole thing with Picard where they were like, they named it after your crew. And it's like the Enterprise. I was hoping it was going to be the USS Picard. I was going to be like, oh, that is pure schmaltz at that point.
I don't know if they could have pushed the limit that far.
I know. Like, I think people would have been like, that's it. I'm fucking out. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done.
Push people to the limit of schmaltz, but you can't go over the limit.
All right. So enough Trek talk there. Let's talk about some gaming news. So what's this thing about Pokemon cards? Did you look into this?
Yeah. So it's pretty funny. So basically a person came into a pretty big card shop with a massive amount of the highest rarity cards from one set of Pokemon from Fusion Strike. These are like, you know, like one per case kind of like rarity. And a case is six entire booster boxes. And this person came in with boxes of these cards. And just these cards. Just the chase ones. So the store owner, obviously being a store owner and knowing how the cards work, was like, hey, so usually when we see this kind of situation, like with this many of this type of card, they're usually fake. So, I don't think I would really be interested in buying these. And the person who was trying to sell them was like, "Oh, they're not fake. I work at the production line for Pokemon." And the guy, the store owner, was like, "I see." So obviously, this guy who basically just blatantly confessed to stealing all these Pokemon cards, to the store owner.
And
Store owner
so,
con
and oh, go ahead.
store owner store owner contacts Pokemon. They get it all sorted out. This dude's arrested. He did steal a absolute shit ton of these cards from the production line. So yeah, that's the story.
Yeah, and that's why there wasn't so many in the packs. Like, they were hard to
Oh
come by.
yes, yeah. So it was a notoriously stingy set with its highest rarity cards. People were like, "Man, it's really hard to get these extremely rare cards," and it's because a shit ton of them were taken before they went into the packs.
And then the guy—I don't know anything ever came of that, but I know that it was like,
I haven't seen an update since the
yeah. I was gonna
like
say I
he
haven't
was
seen any.
arrested.
Yeah, he got fired. Probably is what happened. They probably pressed charges. I don't know.
Oh no, he's going to jail. It's Nintendo. They don't Nintendo press charges against that like 14-year-old kid. Like they don't
Yeah.
if Nintendo can use its legal might against you, it will.
Yeah, but I always thought Sega would because Nintendo don't.
Genesis does.
Oh, that's what it
Nintendo
is.
don't.
Sorry. I bet if Pat ever listened to our podcast, he'd be like, "No, you did it wrong.
He'd be infuriated right now.
You fool, you." Yeah, it's the wonderful world of Pokemon, always making criminals out of 12-year-olds.
This person was definitely not a 12-year-old
I know
then.
they were older.
Well, I mean, they might be in one of those states where they recently made it legal for 14-year-olds to work, so maybe.
Yay! Hey man, if you could get married at 12, you could work at 12. That's what I say.
That sounds GOP to me, baby.
Welcome to Iowa. Border state for Illinois. So the other big news is that they finally dropped some actual information on Warhammer the Old World.
Yes, they did.
And they actually gave like an update to a not a rule, I guess, but like they actually gave something of substance, which is they said it's we so now we know for sure it's going to be 28 millimeter.
Yeah, the bigger bases that were that I was I think I talked about on the cast where like there was the rumor of the bigger bases because of that in-house painting thing.
I know you didn't say that on the podcast, I don't think.
Oh. Oh well. I could have broken the story early. Oh
You
well.
probably could have. But yes, now they are eliminating all 20 millimeter bases and they're moving to 25 millimeters, which is it makes sense. I mean, from a gaming perspective, it makes sense that most of your infantry, that all of your infantry units would have the same base size,
Yes.
essentially.
And on top of that, it'll be nice to be able to actually rank up your models.
That true. That's so true too. Because as a guy who's going to do a Dark Elf army for the Old World, I could tell you those spearmen rank horribly.
Yeah, so yeah, being able to do that would be a big benefit. And I imagine that this means that any mini that was on a 35 or on a 25 millimeter base is going up to
Oh
30
no,
millimeter.
I don't think so. I think 25s are going to stay 25s.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I think all infantry is going to stay the same. All infantry will be at 25 millimeter. 25 millimeter, I think orcs and chaos warriors were the only ones who were on 25s,
Yes,
if I'm not mistaken. Oh no, beastmen were on
Saurus as well.
25s.
Saurus warriors as well.
Saurus warriors on 25s. I think they're all going to stay on 25s. It's just that everything else is going to be moved up to 25s.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense from a game designing standpoint, because when you have multiple different frontages like that, you got to deal with all sorts of Looney Tunes
Well,
ambiguities.
hey, we can't we have to see if what the we don't know what the rules are for frontages are because the units I saw in the picture, all the units were all six-man frontages.
That was the other thing I was going to say, was that it looks like they're doing all six-man frontages, but whether or not that actually happens or not. Because also, when they showed the Bretonnians, so we know that they're re-releasing the old Bretonnian models, like I told you they do. They showed the old Lance formation from fifth edition.
Yes,
Did you
they
notice
did.
that?
I did see that.
So there you go. They're bringing back the Lance formation. I don't know. I like the 6-Ed Lance formation. It wasn't bad. It didn't look as cool as the 5th edition one, but I thought it worked fine.
Yeah, I think it's cool looking. But yeah, so here's another reason why I think that might actually just be a rule, like where units just have frontages now, where you don't actually mix and match them. It's because if you think about it, what's a 6-man? Because a 6-man 25-millimeter frontage
is 150 right? millimeters.
Right. What does that match up completely with? 350 millimeters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which would be another unit size for like a monstrous unit.
A monstrous unit, yeah. And the but the only difference is that you'd have a 6-man frontage for all cavalry. Right?
Yeah.
So because the cavalry is already on 25 by 50s, and that if you do it by 6, the only problem with that ends up being 3 ranks of 6 would give you the same as for like a side flank or something like that.
Right.
But the only problem with that is that I know all of the old cavalry that was sold only came in units of 8 for some fucking reason.
That was so weird.
Yeah, I never understood. I think it was just because of the size of the sprues, and they didn't want to add another fourth sprue on there.
It probably would be like they probably would have needed to add like 1/4 of a sprue to the box or something.
Well, they would just add another sprue. Like, so you get 2 sprues that give you the 8, right? Mm-hmm. So if you add in a third sprue, that would give you the 12. But I think that the sprues were a little. It's weird, like how they do that. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that. Especially with Bretonians, because I know the Bretonians came in units of 8 when they were released in the box set. So they probably will just end up releasing another.
Oh, you know why they came in units of 8? I know why they came in units of 8.
Why did they come in units?
Because you could use, because it would be a 4-man frontage.
Yeah, it was a 4-man frontage. But now if they're making 6-man frontage the minimum, mm-hmm. you gotta at least have 12 in that. So at least if you throw in like another sprue, you can get the 12. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's. This has actually been substantial news, and you know, people are like, "Are you going to rebase? Or what are you going to do?" No, I will probably end up just doing like a movement tray, and just slotting it. So just spacing out a unit tray a little bit wider than that, and then just having like an actual insert in there to make it fit the right size. I'm not going to rebase all my figures for that.
I feel like I really want to do like the ultimate new edition army. Where I just do Bellicor's Legion, but I base it on, obviously I base it on circle bases,
mm-hmm.
and then set up movement trays to use it for Old World, and then have a 40K Age of Sigmar and Old World army all in one.
There you go. Way to be a cheapo.
The ultimate cheapo.
And that's it. But that's if they do a demon army, they might not do a demon army.
That's true. I suppose that's true. I mean, they're doing one of the Chaos Invasions, so they've got to have demons.
Yeah, I mean, they might have demons. They might go old school, like early 6, where it's like your demons, beastmen, and Chaos Warriors are all one army.
That was an interesting army. It was just kind of like, yeah, I don't know, I'll just use whatever, buddy.
Yeah. Well, that was, and I liked how they did it in 5th. That if we want to go way back in the day, let's make our listeners listen to old school rant about it. But in the back in the day, it was all dependent upon who you took as your general. So if you took a general, your demons would be your core choice or your troop choice, and everything else would be specials.
Yes.
And, you know, so that's the way that would work.
I thought that was awesome. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. I liked it, too. And actually, what you're saying, though, with the round bases, it won't work. Because the demon round bases are, I think they move them up to 32s.
Mm. But... I bet you I could figure out a way to fit it in a movement tray properly.
I mean, yeah, you'd just have less figures in the movement tray. That's what the point of the movement tray is all about. Yeah. Is like you'll just put like 9 guys in there instead of like the however many that you need. Because you'll have 32. Because so like 190, 96, 120. You'd have a four man frontage instead of a 6-man frontage with a 32-millimeter bases. I think. So you could still do it. It's just that someone might say, cheater, cheater. He doesn't have the proper frontage. I will let you do it as long as you show me that you have all the figures appropriate. You know that some guy would say that too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was very real. I felt it.
Did you get a flashback there for a second?
Yes, I did. I think it was like PTSD.
PTSD. But yes,
hey,
so
I have PTSD. I can make that joke.
So the we have a the we'll find out more. They're doing it the Warhammer weekend or whatever that's called, the big Warhammer Fest that's coming up. That's when they're gonna drop all of the old world shit, and we'll find out all the information there. They'll do a big full fucking thing on it. So that'll be interesting. Also, just an update on rumors is that Warhammer Fest is where they're also dropping the information on the new Epic. It's going to be Horus Heresy Epic.
Horus Heresy.
So, yeah, so it's going to be compatible. From what I hear, the Titans are from Titanicus are going to be the scale at which everything is in Horus Heresy, and they're going to be like compatible together in the game. Hopefully with the stuff from Aeronautica. But yes, that's the way it's going to be. Everything's going to be a little bit bigger than old school Epic. And the box set, from what I see, is going to be massive. There's a massive amount of shit on there. And you say, but Joe, it's Epic, so everything's going to be small. And I was like, well, if you actually have ever seen some custom stuff that's done in the new scale, it's actually a little bit bigger, and it's, you're going to get a lot of shit in that box set. I'm not going to play it, though. I don't want to play Epic.
I also don't want to play Epic.
I mean, I like
if I want to play Epic, I'll load up Final Liberation on Steam.
Yeah!
Watch my incredibly cheesy cutscenes and play Kino Epic all by myself.
I'm going to the one place that has not been touched by the Horus Heresy. Space!
Man,
we really lost it not getting Tim Curry playing a Primarch at one point.
Oh, that could have, what could have been? What could have been?
I think if I had to put Tim Curry in the Horus Heresy, I'd probably have put him as Melkador. I think he would have done well, especially like 90s to 2000s Tim Curry. Not that he's super old now with his stroke and everything. That would not be fair to Tim Curry. But yeah, the slightly older Tim Curry of the late 90s, early 2000s, I think could have played an excellent Melkador. But yeah, I digress. Because everyone else, all of the actual Primarchs need to be played by professional wrestlers from the Attitude Era. And I don't care what anyone else says on that one.
I agree with that. That's a good idea.
All right. So I'm going to stop here, and then we will come back and answer some viewer questions.
I can't forget the recording's in progress no more. I can't forget the recording's in progress and it never will.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So I actually wanted to leave some time for viewer questions because we actually got a decent amount. I think, God bless Discord. It's so much better than fucking Facebook.
Oh, Facebook? Oh, yeah. It's way better.
Absolutely. Let's see. Mark Buckingham asked us, oh, by the way, if you do want to join the Discord, we usually have the link up on our Facebook page. If you don't use Facebook, you can go to Instagram and just ask me for the link to the Discord. I'll do that. But then you got to have an Instagram account. There's no like really good way of like publicly putting out the Discord link that's easy to get to. If I remember, I will try and put it in the YouTube, but then you get YouTube people, and I don't know if I want YouTube people. you could check on the Facebook page. If you just type in, you know, Game Classy Podcast Facebook, you could probably get to us and just get the link for the Discord. We are very active. Mark Buckingham, though, asks, in the podcast, I would like Joe and Steve to talk about the first time they found games outside of the realms of Monopoly, Connect Four, etc., basic things like that. How did they first encounter the gaming that they have come to love? First of all, coming to love is a very, very strong term.
Yeah.
I use it to dull the pain that I feel on a daily basis.
I hate games, on the other hand.
Yes, I hate games as well. You can't play these games without learning how to hate them.
I hate them.
So do you have a fun, interesting story about that?
Actually, I encountered weird games, I guess I would say, quote unquote, weird games before I encountered your standard games like Monopoly and Connect Four and stuff. Like the one of the earliest games I played was my uncle's D&D electronic.
Ooh, the one with the little walls.
Yep, it has the little walls and it had the metal figures.
Yeah,
and you play and like you, it used sound effects for you to find stuff. It's like burr, 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 burr. Like that game was a blast. I loved that game. So like that was like one of the first games I played. Like that's like literally one of the first memories I have. And like I never really was into the, like, because I loved board games as a kid. Like that was one of my favorite things ever. But I liked the, like, the weird games, like, you know, like Atmosphere and Omega Virus, you know, Hero Quest, you know, those are all the types of Key to the Kingdom,
yeah.
The Dark Tower, you know, like all of, basically like all of those, you know, if it was a game that, if there was a fucking wizard on the box, I wanted that game.
Yeah. I would call those like tier two games for like board games and stuff like that. I mean, Connect Four, Monopoly, those are tier one games. Everyone has them. Everyone's played them at some point. The tier two ones are the ones that were still put out by Milton Bradley or Hasbro, but they're interesting. They have wizards on the box, right?
Yes, yes.
But they were still available at the Toys R Us.
Right, right. Yeah.
Like, and then you get like games like that are Euro games and stuff like that. Those are like tier three games. You got to be introduced to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I'm kind of the opposite of you. I definitely played the board games more than I played any of the like other games. And it's kind of hard. I was thinking about like those tier two games that you're talking about, like Atmosphere and all that. I probably the first one that I ever played was Battle Masters, which I've talked about quite a bit on this podcast.
Yeah, Battle Masters is dope.
First of all, I love toy soldiers. I always played with them as a kid. And then I was like, oh my God, this box has little toy soldiers in it. So many toy soldiers. I want them. I want them badly. and I got that for Christmas back in, I don't know, 1989, 1990, whenever the game came out.
Mm-hmm.
I played the hell out of that game. Other board, and my parents were always good about getting me crazy tier two board games like Torpedo Run and Crossfire.
Crossfire. You get caught up in the crossfire. Crossfire.
Just shooting ball bearings at each other.
Yeah, that just becomes shooting ball bearings at each other the game.
God, what a crazy time to be alive.
What an age but the, to be yeah. alive.
I think like tier three games though, like Settlers of Catan or Puerto Rico or any Euro games in general.
Go.
I want to say it was around, because I had gotten introduced to Warhammer when I was in high school, but that wasn't even like, I never really played any like actual Euro games until I was in college or post college. And I think my friend Josh really introduced me to some of those games, and I kind of brought them into my own way of playing. And so it's been part of my own lexicon for many, many years.
Mm.
Yeah. I was trying to think who introduced me to the DC deck building game? I can't remember, but the collectible card games though, I was also introduced to at high school, but I picked the wrong one. Like if I had just picked Magic and I had bought in high school back when I could buy, you know, the first series of Magic, and I probably would have kept my cards in pretty great condition. I would have, yeah, I would have had some bank, but instead I chose the Star Wars CCG game. Because I like Star Wars.
I like Star Wars.
Hey, Steve, isn't Star Wars better than Star Trek? Star Trek. Yeah, what nerds. I like the Mandalorian.
The Mandagaborian.
Mandagaborian.
The one thing I will say that I obviously haven't watched it since the first season, but the I see some clips sometimes, and I agree. This person pointed out their favorite thing about the show is that when Baby Yoda does his force jumps, it's clearly them just throwing the puppet.
I know. It looks, this last season, the Baby Yoda moving around has been hysterical.
So that sounds, that like, that sounds awesome. I was like, oh, that sounds great.
It literally looks like Marionette Pinocchio, like walking downstairs most of the time.
I unironically love that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. The Mandalorian has become, so you know how like Star Trek Picard is like referencing a good TV show, Star Trek, Next Generation, that's beloved by many.
Yes.
The Mandalorian has just become a live action like sequel show to all the Dave Filoni Clone Wars and Rebels shows, which is fine. But I'm sorry, guys, those shows weren't that good to begin with. Like,
I never watched them.
It took a pile of poo that was the prequels and kind of made it into something that's watchable, but it wasn't that good.
I never watched it. The only Clone Wars thing I watched outside of the movies was the Jendi Tartakovsky animated,
yeah,
which was awesome. That was great. Those are still good, I'm sure. I haven't seen them in years. I'm sure they hold up.
Well, that's what I kind of show people when they talk about how good the Clone Wars was, and I show them the Jendi Tartakovsky one, and I say, look at what they took away from you.
Yeah, this is what they took from you.
This is what they took from you. This is the future all liberals want.
I'm joining the war. I'm joining the war on the woke mind virus, on the side of the woke mind virus.
Yes. So anyway, that's my take on that question. Okay. Next one. Cat paints the world. What cheese would you pair with Nuln oil, Steve? I you don't eat cheese anymore, do you?
No, not generally. It's not something where I'd be like, if you prepared me a meal and there was cheese on it, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll eat this. But you know, I don't very often.
You don't choose, and you were never big one on fancy cheeses either. If I remember correctly,
I really liked brie and camembert.
Yeah, but that was about it though. I never
really went past like that kind of like that level of cheese. It was never really like I was a fan of brie and camembert. That was kind of it. I also like Limburger.
Yeah, Limburger. I have an answer for this one. I don't know if you have one or you just want to defer to me.
I would, my answer, because I know the taste of Nuln oil well. Because I know the taste of Nuln oil well, I actually think that it would pair best with a sharp cheddar.
Really? That's an interesting question. Way of putting it.
A sharp cheddar would be my, a very hard sharp cheddar would be my choice to pair with Nuln oil. Okay.
See, I'm going the exact opposite of you, because sharp cheddar doesn't have the fats in it that you usually want, because Nuln oil has a very bittery taste to it. And so with a bitter drink, you'd want something that's fatty. You want something that's going to coat your mouth so that the bitter can cut through it, but also not be too affected by it. And I'm going to go with a good Roquefort.
Yeah, see, for me, that's why I'm going with the cheddar, because I want to enhance that bitterness and really make it like a power taste.
Like painful, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, like a power taste.
I would say Roquefort, which is a blue cheese from France, probably the most famous blue cheese of them all. That's what I would go with. I think that would be fairly delicious. Get yourself a big hunk of it. And don't even put it on crackers or anything. Just bite into the Roquefort and then drink your Nuln oil. That's what I recommend.
I like it.
Kevin B, who has been on the podcast before, asks, Arena Rex, but Star Wars in 44mm would have been a smash hit. Why did they shitter point the bed instead? I don't know if it shit the bed. I think it does. It's doing okay. I mean, it hasn't been released yet to the general public, right? Or has it?
I don't actually know.
Yeah, I've been on a kind of a gaming break since Gen Con. I usually need about a month to reset my brain. So I haven't been following it that much. It's going to do well because it's a Star Wars game and people don't care. Like,
it's true.
There will probably be some drop off from people who play Legion. Like, people who play Legion probably aren't going to go to Shitterpoint, but I think that they're it's not going to do poorly. I just think so. My thing is that the problem with most of those games from, you know, Fantasy Flight and Asmodee and all those, it's all the proprietary dice and all the tokens. It's too much.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I will say about Games Workshop games is that you only need dice. You need a shit ton of D6s, But as long as you have a handful of them, you're fine. That's all you need. You don't need any special dice. You don't need any special shaped dice. You don't need any tokens. You just play the fucking game with dice.
Tokens are something that tokens aren't required, but a lot of people do use tokens in Warhammer simply because there is a lot of shit to remember.
There is, and you're correct on that. But you don't have to. That's the thing.
Yeah. The dice is the biggest one. Like, yeah. 'Cause I actually don't mind tokens as much as I mind. It depends. Like, the tokens can very swiftly become excessive.
Yeah.
Basically, like, my rule of thumb is, like, if your game has more than six conditions, cut your game to six conditions.
Yeah.
And like, if that's simple as that. Like, if you have more than six conditions that can be applied to a figure, cut it to six. Don't have any more than that.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I think that there's a little much in that game. But as I said, it'll do well. I actually like the concept of it. I like the idea of the warbands, and I like how you build the warbands. It's going to have problems, though, because you're going to have most effective warbands, and that's what's going to take over the fucking game. Like, you're going to have to have your Anakin clone trooper Commander Cody combo, and that's going to be what everybody takes.
No doubt.
Because I guarantee you, Ares Games is not playtested to the point where it's going to be a viable game. Though that they tried really hard to make Crisis Protocol into kind of a tournament game in some ways, which is weird.
I mean, if you can do it, it's not impossible.
It's not impossible. You know what? Everything's possible if you try.
That's right.
No, wait, that's not true at all.
Everything's a dildo if you're brave enough.
Everything's Abraham Lincoln. Yes. So that's our answer, Kevin. I don't think that they've actually shit the bed yet. I think that it's going to sell the gangbusters and do incredibly well. But I think what would turn me off is I have this beautifully painted Legion army, and now I have to paint more figures in a bigger scale. I can't just use my figure over to here. I think part of it too is that Ares kind of realized that people are just printing their own minis. Mm-hmm. So they have to have a rules heavy game in order to sell the rules, but everyone just scans the rules and puts them up on the internet anyway, which is way easier than even 3D printing your figures. So it's like a lose-lose situation. So that's why they have to have proprietary dice.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess.
Small Thumbs asks, well, he says, I'm going to Salute tomorrow. Woohoo! What traders, talks, demos would you like to try have better access to in the US? In this global age in the US, we have pretty much access to everything. So I don't think it's really, I don't think there's anything in the UK that we would need access to, right? I'm sure you have something that's like Japanese only that you'd like to have better access to.
Yeah, there's Japanese only stuff, but like in most cases, you can get most cases everyone's already got access to everything. Like in most cases,
well, in the US at least, we have like if it's a game or something that comes out in the UK, we have easy access to it.
Generally, I mean, there's distributors everywhere for everything. So that's got a. I can't think of any kind. Like, I'm trying to think of a manufacturer that I know exists that like isn't already in the US market. And I can't think of one.
So here's my take on that, though. He does say demos. And I think one of the biggest problems with U.S. gaming or game stores in the U.S. is that if a game store owner wants to develop a community in their store, they have to like do regular demos on specific games to get people interested in it. Because if a person plays a game at least once, they're probably going to be interested in it. They're like, "Ooh, I like this mechanic, or I like these figures, or I like this or this or this." Mm-hmm. So if you run those demos on a regular basis, you're going to be able to get more players to come in to play a game on a regular basis. And if you just say like, "All right, 2024 is going to be the year of Fart Blasters United. We're going to play Fart Blasters United in this store. I'm going to do demos of Fart Blaster United every Saturday. To get people interested in it, and this is how we're going to sell it, and this is how we're going to do it."
I'm more of a Fart Blasters Divided fan.
Oh, no! The most hated of expansions. But most game store owners are like, yeah, that's the mini games over here. Here's where I make the real money, opening magic packs. which is true. So I think that more distributors or more game companies should kind of invest in people, in having people go to stores to do demos of games for people. It's kind of like when you have when you go to a Binny's and you see people giving you free alcohol. Binny's is a local alcohol place.
Binny's Beverage Depot.
Or Beverage Depot. And you have people giving samples of the alcohol, which is how you get people to buy your alcohol.
Yes.
Especially if they're hot girls. So if a company invested in hot girls going to local gaming stores and getting people demos of their game, I bet you could get way more people to invest in your game.
This is probably accurate.
Maybe not hot girls, because people would be like, girls.
That's true.
Yeah. So maybe you get some good looking girls. Don't get the hot girls. But don't tell them that they're good looking girls and not hot, because that would be inappropriate, I think.
I think this entire thing is inappropriate.
Oh no, I got canceled.
Yep, Joe's canceled on Discord and on Twitter.
Oh,
it's trending.
No.
There's like 10 people who talked about it, and then that's the biggest it's the biggest breaking news in tabletop gaming. 10 people are talking about something.
No. That's it. I'm going to start listening to Ben Shapiro. You brought me all to this.
I love this. Like, you pointed out that I'm racist, so my response is I'm going to get even more racist.
I'm going to get even more racist. That's sexist, Steve, not racist.
Whatever.
Yes. Yeah. So you got to get more demos. He also asks, have you ever been? Or I shouldn't say he. They also asked us, have you ever been to a LARP? I'm just assuming that our listeners are male because girls. But
this is true.
But I'll just say they. Have you ever been to a LARP? I have, Steve. You've LARPed before, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Did you? You only did the vampire LARP. Have you ever done like combat LARP?
I've never done combat LARP.
I've only done combat LARP. LARP. No, I've done other LARPs, but I've done combat LARPs and regular. LARPs.
I did vampire LARP, and I did one. Or I ran one, which was modified vampire LARP.
A lot of vampire LARP.
Well, it was the easiest rule set because everyone already knew it. So yeah. It was like we just weren't playing in the World of Darkness, but like we used the same like bidding system that game has, where you throw rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, I did, for our listeners, maybe not long time. I think we just mentioned it recently. In this area where we live now, Vampire the Masquerade was huge in the early 2000s. Like, there were multiple games going on in multiple places.
Yeah, with like a lot of people in the games, like 60 plus people.
Yeah, it was kind of like weird. Like, look, thinking back on it, like, wow, there was a lot of people playing Vampire the Masquerade.
There really was. Like it's like one of those things where I thought about it. I was like, oh yeah, I used to do LARP. I was so such a fucking weirdo nerd. And I was like, wait a minute, there was like 60 people at like each game, and there was like 5 games. I was like, that was basically as mainstream as it got.
I do LARPing at Gen Con. Well, at least I did for several years in a row. Mostly the combat ones, which is fun. And I did a lot of like just regular like late night LARPing for different game systems. I've done I did the live action Call of Cthulhu. I've done I don't remember what system the other ones were, but yeah, I've done it. I used to do those all the time at Gen Con. And I really like them. It's not something that I would do outside of what I'm currently doing now. You know, it's not, I don't have time for it. And everyone, apparently it's all just like people trying to have sex. So I'm not doing that either.
I'm too busy. I'm too busy for that.
Yeah. I got too many minis to paint to try and have sex.
That's right.
What's the best old school GW miniature to club someone to death with?
I mean, it's gotta be the old Dreadnought, right? Where it was just a wad of metal.
Yeah, I was gonna say the several thousand dollar Thunderhawk, the metal one.
But I don't think that thing was solid enough.
Oh, you know what? It's very, very, very. I think it's like 20 pounds when put together.
Yeah, but I mean, could it survive the impacts of like striking someone with it?
Well, in order to put it, first of all, they say nothing about surviving the impact. Secondly.
They said club someone to death with. So like, if you're only going to get one solid hit,
but you're only going to get one hit, that's going to be the one thing that's going to do it in one hit.
Oh, you think it'll be one hit? Okay, I see. I just don't think you could do it in one hit. I don't think it would work.
Yeah, it's big enough that you can get momentum with it, like when you're swinging.
I think it has to be.
You're gonna go with the Dreadnought?
I think it has to be the Dreadnought, because the Dreadnought's just a solid, like, wad of metal, so you could just pound it into their head until it was just a pile of goo.
Yeah, you're right on that. I mean, it's definitely the GW equivalent of a heavy rock.
Yeah, that's the first thing I think of is like, what's the thing that's closest to just rock?
What's the thing that's closest to rock?
Yeah,
I'm trying to think
Krog
of like
need rock.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like other like big metal figures, and there aren't many that are. I think that might be the. I don't know. That's a good question, but I definitely my tip pick is going to be the metal Thunderhawk from the early late 90s, early 2000s, or late 80s, early 2000s. I don't know when the hell that thing came out, but I have seen one in person, and I do know that even if you do put it together, you have to have so many pins in it that that thing's not going to break if you hit someone with it.
You just weld it.
Yeah, I mean, you literally have to weld that thing together. There was a guy who did a video of, like, he bought it, unboxed it, and, like, put it together. And it was a really cool video to watch, but it was, like, a YouTube video. So it was, like, filled with, like, lots of, like, smash that like button. And once again, I'm just like, I'm too old for this shit. I don't need to smash the like button because I don't like this.
I don't want to smash the like button. I hate this.
Yes. Okay, Kelreth asks, do the 10th edition teasers so far make it seem like it could be a good addition, or is the community just hoping? So I'm just going to say, like I say with most of these games, is that when the edition starts out, it's a good addition because the rules are much more streamlined and you don't have much to worry about. It's once you get into the rules bloat that the addition starts to suck. Off the bat, I think it's a good addition. I think the changes sound interesting enough. I don't know. I can't give you a definitive answer.
To me, it looks like they're making it a lot more like Age of Sigmar. So I think that's going to be much better for 40K.
Yeah.
So that like... simple as that. That's my top to bottom of it. So I think it'll be I think it will be a good addition. How long it will be a good addition, I don't know.
Yeah, so the thing that I like about it is that they're getting rid of a lot of the things that I hated about 40K but I love about 30K, which is like, you know, putting customizing units, having like, oh, I'm gonna put 11 guys in this unit because that's optimal. Instead of like, and 10th edition looks more like you buy a 5-man unit and you get a 5-man unit that are equipped with this. This is what you get.
Right.
Less dice rolling. And as I say, I think that they're streamlining the rule set so it becomes a faster play, but it's not the initial release. It's going to be when you're 2 years down the line or a year and a half down the line and most of the armies have gotten army books, how good of a release is it going to be?
Yeah, because like if you look at Age of Sigmar right now, Age of Sigmar right now is in a really good spot. Like each time they do like their little battle slate things, like the armies kind of get adjusted in the correct way. And then when they release each general's handbook, that it actually shakes up the metagame, which is like very new for like a war game. Like that's weird. Like that's not a thing that you expect in Warhammer really until because that's the thing. Like people, a lot of people forget like. The metagame for most of these games, like if you played a lot of tournaments or whatever, it gets stagnant because like the best army comes out at a time they don't know when the best army is going to come out.
Oh yeah.
Because they'll be like, okay, well this is the third army release. And like they release an army that's so busted. Like that army is just the best. And that army stays the best usually until they did a brand new edition because that army book is just OP. And like, they don't do updates and changes. So now the fact that they're actually willing to do these updates and changes and be like, hey, this army's actually just winning way too fucking much. Let's nerf it. And like, hey, this army fucking sucks. Let's buff it. Like, that's great.
Yeah, I do like that they're being a little bit more responsive with it and accepting that it's more of a, I don't want to say tournament, but it's more of a competitive game, which I think is a good way of looking at it. Is like, can you make your game competitive?
Right. I mean, a lot of it too is like is changes that like you just will just organically help people who like aren't necessarily like actually tryharding but like fell into it where they're like, oh, like I just took an army that's just better than my friend's army, so I always win.
Yeah.
Like, oops.
All right. So Raza asks us a couple questions as Raza always does. He actually recommends the Great Unclean one, which I think is also a good figure. to club someone to death with.
That is also very close to Rock.
Yes. He asks, I know you guys likely have your Warhammer armies that are waiting to come off the shelves with GW upping the base size for the models. Are you going to rebase, use movement trays, or are you looking at buying new? I will not be buying new unless there's new stuff released.
I don't have a Warhammer army waiting on the shelf, so mine will be new Tomb Kings.
Yes. So for me, as I think I said earlier, I'm just going to get a larger tray with slots in it for the bases.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to worry about, I'll probably 3D print it. So I don't have to worry about rebasing anything that I currently have. But anything I build, no, I'm probably going to do, I'll probably, if I build one of my armies in storage for the game, I'm going to still put them on 20 mil bases. Just so I could have the possibility of going back and playing 6th edition, my beloved 6th edition.
There's no chance of that happening, Joe. Just give it up. Put them on the bigger bases. Put them on the bigger bases.
Never.
Put them on the bigger bases.
Dude, I already have like 5 armies built on 20 mil bases. I'm not going to give up on that.
No. If it's a new army.
No, even if it's a new army, I gotta have it match.
That's funny.
So he also asks, it can be said that studios should only remake movies that have good concepts but fell short with when at the execution. If you were a producer for a movie studio, what 3 movies would you remake? My 3 movies would be Krull, Battle Beyond the Stars, and The Indomitable Dr. Fibes. You have any opinions on this one?
3 movies I remake.
Well, while you're thinking about
it. Yeah, I'll think. If you're ready to go, go for
it. I got a couple locked and loaded. Number one would be John Carter. The Disney movie that failed horribly with the kid from Friday Night Lights. I think that can be done. I think, though, that in order to have it properly done, you need to go back in time to the 1980s, and it needs to be directed by, like, Roger Corman with like, either rubber suit Tars Tarkas or a guy in, like really poor prosthetics. But I think that movie can be done and done incredibly well. But it's like what we said last podcast. You can't give it too much money. You give that movie too much money, it's going to be horrible. You give it enough money that the director has to like be a director, it's going to be amazing. I'd also like to see a remake of Conan done well. I like the Jason Momoa one. It was very, very schlocky. But I want to see a good sword and sorcery Conan movie. I wouldn't mind a Conan TV show. But it needs to have a lot of sex and violence or sex and violence. And then I think how Disney's doing the live action remakes of all their old cartoons. I want a live action remake of either Atlantis or Treasure Planet. Because I love both of those movies. I think a live action Atlantis would look amazing, but I think it also would look just like Stargate SG-1. And I'm not hating on that idea either. Do you have any opinions?
I really don't, honestly. Like,
you don't watch that many movies anymore.
Yeah, I don't really watch that many movies anymore. And like, I don't know. Like, if a movie sucks, I just don't finish it.
There you go.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess I would just I would just remake good movies. That's the thing. Like, with remakes, you want to remake good movies and improve them. That's what you want. Like, you want to see like it be better.
Well, yeah, you want a good concept done better.
Yeah, so like, I don't know, most of the good concepts are done fine. Like, it's like RoboCop is great. Like, you don't need to remake RoboCop.
No.
And they did remake RoboCop.
Yeah. Well, I think out of Raza's list, I mean, not anything against Raza, but like Battle Beyond the Stars, I think is perfect.
And I thought Krull was perfect too.
Like, Krull is not perfect. Krull could use some improvement, but it's a bad enough story that it's like you can't really improve on this because it's kind of a shitty story.
I love Krull when I was a kid.
I did too when I was a kid. It's not that great of a movie. And the Indomitable Dr. Fives, it's like, how could you improve on that movie? Like, the reason why that movie rocks is it's dead. So then Raza also asks, Chicago question, did you ever meet Bozo the Clown? Or did you ever visit the Bozo the Clown show as a kid? Or have you ever met Sven Gulli? I remember watching Bozo as a kid in the 80s on WGN. WGN was a cable channel in Portland, or at the time, I watched Sven Gulli every weekend on MyTV, on MeTV. When I was a kid in Portland, we had a similar show to Bozo called Ramblin' Rod, and my dad took the show once.
Rod.
I honestly did not remember the visit, but my dad did show me a picture of us with the host. I never went to the Bozo the Clown show. When I was a kid, it was at its like peak popularity of the 1980s, and it was impossible to get tickets. But I did watch Bozo regularly on Channel 9 with my grandma. And did you ever meet Svengoolie? Yes, I've met Svengoolie several times. I never got a picture with him, though, which I regret. I don't regret. He's not dead yet. I could probably still get a picture with Rich Coase.
Yeah,
but I have met Svengoolie several times. And we used to watch him in the early 90s when he would be on Channel 26, The U.
The U!
The U with the Coase Zone. Do you remember the Co-Zone, Steve?
I do remember the Co-Zone.
Yeah, he was a cartoon host. And he's just a perennial fixture in Chicago. Everyone loves him. He's one of those guys that you always kind of expect like shit to come out about, like he's a perv or something like that, but he never does. So he's a beloved icon of Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah. He was recently on The Last Drive-In too, which was nice. And also, it is absolutely 100% true that in Chicago, you cannot say Berwyn without everybody shouting Berwyn.
Berwyn.
I mean, it's bad. It's bad out here. I mean, like you take the BNSF to downtown from out in the burbs and they say like, next stop, Berwyn.
Berwyn.
Everyone in the train car. Ridiculous. But did you ever go to the Bozo show?
I never went to the Bozo show. No,
my dad was on the Bozo show and got to play the buckets.
Wow. How did you get the buckets?
I don't think he made it to the end, which you got a brand new Schwinn bicycle if you hit the sixth bucket. I don't think he made it.
Man.
Yeah. And nowadays, you know, everybody just learns how to play beer pong. And so now they can master the Bozo buckets, but they no longer exist.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I also have met Svengoolie several times, and I also regret not taking a picture of Svengoolie.
It's one of those things where you like see him so much that you just like you don't take it into account that he's like he's going to die very, very soon. I think the man has had like 4 heart attacks.
It's keeping him going, all the Italian beef,
all that Italian beef.
The Italian beef's keeping them going. Keeping his ticker in good shape.
I saw someone complaining about an Italian beef the other day about it being dipped, and I was like, and they were complaining that it looked like dog shit. And I'm like, no, that looks good. Yeah, that looks real good.
Yeah, like a dip. I mean, you don't have to have your Italian beef dip. It's good without dip, but it's good with dip, too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, because of my stomach, I don't eat jardiniere. I don't have anything against it. It right now there's like a race to make like everyone makes their own jardiniere now, because of course you do. It's a hipster Chicago thing. And everyone tries to make it spicier and spicier. I can't do it. I can't have most jardiniere anymore because it's too spicy for my stomach. I can't handle it. So I do regret that. And, you know, I can't get an Italian beef anymore with jardiniere just because I'll be shitting my brains out literally in like 20 seconds after taking my first bite. It's an old man problem, Steve, and I understand it. I just compensate. Yeah. I have been to the WGN building as well, so.
That I've been to too. I've been to the WGN building. Yeah.
Yeah. And then our last question, Frantic Gamer asks, current favorite model to shove up your butt? Anything in particular?
I mean, it's still just the original HeroQuest Barbarian. I like feeling the muscularity.
You like feeling the muscularity. I'm gonna go with the new Plastic Contemptor from the Horus Heresy box set. It's got nice round edges and a big flat base, so it ain't getting stuck up there unless the glue breaks. But you got to make sure that you base that thing properly.
That's right.
All right. Nice. So go to the Game Classy Facebook page so you can get the link to go to the Game Classy Discord, which is going to be the best way to get in contact with us. We got lots of different sub discords or channels, as they're called sometimes, where you can show off your models, talk about all the stuff that we talk about on here, especially Star Trek. We don't have a Star Wars channel, and we never will. Right, Steve?
We never will.
We never will. So keep that in mind. If you want to Also, find us outside of the Discord. I'm available on Instagram at Game Classy Joe. I just reached 1,000 followers. I got the 1K, yo. Got the 1K. I'm very excited about that. I'm actually going to be posting my fully printed 3D resin Reaver Titan that I just printed out and painted.
Nice.
That's been my project for the last month. So you will be able to see that there. It's very Chicago. It's in a Chicago theme. Because we're a Chicago podcast. I got Chicago Titans.
You got Chicago Titan. He's going to Chicago you up.
You know, most people's Titans, they got laser blasters. Mine has an Italian sassy.
Mine shoots Jardinere.
Mine shoots the extra spicy Jardinere.
It gets progressively spicier as the game goes on because the hipsters are all trying to outdo each other.
Exactly. You get an old.
The last shot, that's a ghost pepper Jardinere.
It's a ghost pepper Jardinere.
Ghost pepper Jardinere. Guy who gave it to you, mustache, has 10 pounds of wax on it.
That's probably absolutely true. All right. And then you could also, the best way to help with the podcast, like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes, like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes, which is also available to the podcast. Steve's not available anywhere because he threatened Elon Musk too many times.
That's right. Yeah, I'm banned from the internet.
He's banned from the internet. So, Steve, until next time.
Happy birthday, Kanata. That's the VTuber birthday of the day.
That's dumb. Say something about Jardinere.
I wonder what VTubers would say about Jardinere.
Oh, my stomach! Mi estomigo!
Mi estomigo. Are you the Bumblebee man?
Yes. Later.
Game Classy.